We've got the IRS on the agenda today. I also wanted to mention something about oil trains. You know, I've been seeing these stories that are running in most of the Washington state papers. Seattle's no different because you have a lot of liberal media in your neck of the woods. So do I. And here's the way they're headlined. Quick facts. 1 to 2 oil trains pass through Washington state every day. That's true. The number of trains is expected to increase. Well, let me tell you this. That's not entirely true, or it's a little deceptive. It already has. Do you know that as recently as 10 years ago, the entire United States of America had just 9,600 oil tank cars that traveled through the United States in a year? Remember that number? Less than 10,000 in a year. Now, that reflected what we were doing with domestic oil production. Do you know what we're doing now? It's somewhere just shy of 500,000 tank cars full of oil. Now, to liberals and environmentalists and the president's buddy Tom Steyer, the billionaire who made his money in oil but now is using his money to fight the production of domestic oil, that's terrible news. You see, when I hear that we're running 400,000 to 500,000 tank cars full of oil, that tells me a number of things. Number one, we're becoming energy independent, and we're doing it quickly. And even though the president runs around the country giving speeches, taking credit for it, bragging about how we're becoming energy independent, his administration has been one of the biggest roadblocks to that development around. They blocked the Keystone XL pipeline. They actually, coming into office, reneged on and decided to do away with a number of leases on federal lands that had already been given out during the Bush administration. The Obama administration canceled those leases. And yet private entrepreneurs drilling mostly on private lands, you've all heard about the success in North Dakota, they've managed to come up with the oil that's going to make America energy independent. So the increase from fewer than 10,000 trains a year, sorry, 10,000 tank cars per year, to more than 400,000, just shy of 500,000 individual oil tank cars, my stepson, who is now working in North Dakota, puts oil in those tank cars. I can't remember how many gallons, but I'm guessing that we're talking about, you know, tens of tons of oil in each one of those tank cars. So you have this concern, and the concern is exhibited in these stories that say no state or countywide plans are in place to deal with derailments. Well, that doesn't surprise me at all. County and state government, do you think they operate competently? I mean, in the last 10 years, as the oil industry has met the challenge of moving all that oil around, as the train industry, the rail industry has met that challenge, do you think anybody in government was paying attention? Of course not. Well, now they say King County is joining the growing ranks of states and governments trying to figure out what to do if an oil train derails. They say the trains towing more than 100 tanker cars carrying highly volatile crude oil routinely pass through high population areas, including downtown Seattle, but there is no plan in place to respond. Do you know what they're really doing? I know what the real agenda is here. I know that there are liberals who run the Seattle city government who don't believe in burning oil. Now, it's a little hypocritical because most of them make their way to work in automobiles powered by the product of oil, but they officially don't like it. They think that all of you should stop using less oil, even while they continue to ride around in mostly government-provided cars powered by gasoline or diesel oil purchased with your tax dollars, because they, of course, are elites. And the elites are allowed to live by a different set of rules than the ones that they want to impose on the rest of us. You see, my point of view on oil is that the availability of inexpensive liquid fuel that propels the transportation of America, that's not just you and me getting to work. That's you and me being able to go to the store and buy clothing and food and all of the other goods that we need, and all of it gets to that store through a combination of jet airplanes, diesel-powered trains, diesel-powered trucks, and your gasoline-powered automobile that takes you to the store. Without all that inexpensive, relatively inexpensive energy, none of that happens, and Americans don't get the things they need. So then you've got King County Council member Rod Dembrowski, who says it's a new problem and a new risk and a serious, yeah, new. New in government is we just figured out it was happening. Now, if they'd been paying attention, they'd have noticed over the last 10 years as it increased from 10,000 tank cars to more than 400,000 tank cars. But they have to wait for an election year, I guess, so that they can bring it up. Today, our emergency plan doesn't address it. Dombrowski authored an ordinance that paves the way for responders to study and train for response to oil train crashes. He says an oil train derailment in Quebec in the summer of 2013 sparked explosions, killing 47 people. Now, do you really think that the folks down at the Seattle Fire Department have not already talked about this problem? Do you think that it takes the City Council of Seattle to pass an ordinance to say to the fire department, by the way, you should be ready for this, because I'm willing to bet that the average firefighter, paramedic, police officer, they're well aware of this risk. In fact, I'd be willing to bet, without having talked to any of them, that there are chiefs within the Seattle Fire Department who've already talked to their guys about formulating plans for responding to that kind of emergency. And it would be absurd to think that they haven't to some extent already, because, you know, before all those oil trains, those wonderful oil trains full of liquid fuel started flowing through Seattle in such large numbers, there were always train cars full of caustic chemicals, explosive substances, all of the feedstocks of industry. You don't build a Boeing airplane without having feedstocks that produce the plastic that's inside that airplane, that produce the fuels that fuel that airplane. You don't get that done. So do you really think Seattle Fire is sitting there saying, well, we've never had hazardous trains full of hazardous materials coming through town before? Are you kidding me? These folks are professionals. And then all of a sudden somebody at the city council says, hey, here's one we can jump on board. If we get on this issue, maybe we can put a roadblock up and stop the oil trains from coming together, and say it's because we're scared of what might happen. Well, if you're scared of trains today, you ought to go down and ask for a manifest or look up a manifest of all the industrial chemicals and industrial substances, polyvinyl chloride, you know, I mean, I can't even name them all. But if you work in those industries, you understand that's how those things get to American cities. And that has been true for decades in America, that we have moved dangerous things around this country. And in fact, about 3 weeks ago, I had reason to go look up some of the numbers and say, well, exactly how dangerous is this oil transportation? They say that for every 20 tons of oil moved in America, they spill an average of 2 gallons of oil. It's actually about the same rate at which they have spills in moving things in pipelines. The industry has a tremendous safety record, and in fact, a lot of the industry is pushing to have these tank cars with double walls in them and stronger fronts and backs so that if there is a derailment, that one train car doesn't punch a hole in the other train car. And if you look at the industry's track record of moving 400,000-plus train cars around America now every year, and the number is still accelerating, well, you understand that they have a better safety record than a lot of industries do. And then think about one other thing. How much of that oil would be able to move by pipeline if President Barack Obama would only allow the Keystone XL pipeline and any other pipeline that they have tried to build? And then ask yourself, if you had to guess, how have most of the members of the Seattle City Council voted? Do you think they voted for President Obama? I'd be willing to bet that a lot of them have, probably a majority of them. So who's at fault in trying to stop better ways, safer ways, more efficient ways of moving all that fuel around America? You voted for the man who has single-handedly stopped the Keystone XL pipeline. You voted for the man who opposes oil drilling and is still opposing oil drilling, even though some of his rich buddies made their money in oil. And then he's standing in the way of making sure we can move it around the country safely. I'm just suggesting that when you see those stories and those scary headlines, oil trains, danger, just remember who the danger is being created by. And if government is pleading that they weren't aware of the problem, I want some smart reporter to walk up to Shama Sawant and say, Councilmember Sawant, have you ever talked to the Seattle Fire Department? Have you asked them whether or not their fire chief has plans in place for his men and his engines and his women to respond if there's an industrial accident? Look around Seattle. You've got a port facility. You're moving all kinds of things in and out of that facility all day long. And you're telling me that the Seattle Fire Department chiefs have been sitting on their keisters, not drawing up plans or not with any kind of clue? I'd be willing to bet these council members that say we don't have a plan, what they mean is the Seattle City Council hasn't yet written a plan where they put it down on paper. And they had a bunch of people sit in a room and they draw up a bunch of paperwork. Do you know how useful that is if you have Democrat leadership? Let me take you back a few years to the Katrina hurricane in Louisiana. When that thing hit, and there were all those people trapped because they couldn't get out of town, I got on the air, and I just started riffing on it. Somebody called me up and said, "You're an idiot, Lars. How would you have got those people out of town?" I said, if I were the mayor of city, of that city, remember Ray Nagin, the mayor of that city? That guy was such a joke. I said, you know what I'd have done? If I'd been the mayor, I'd called up the school superintendent and said, schools are closed anyway. Let's round up every single bus we can find, load it up with anybody who needs to get out of town. And they said, where'd you find the drivers? I said, I'd ask for any able-bodied person with a valid driver's license. And if they had some experience driving a bus, get on this bus, drive these people out of town, fill this bus full of food and water, and bring it back to such and such location. They said, that's a crazy idea. Do you know what we found out a few days later? That was exactly what they had written in New Orleans' emergency plan for responding to a major hurricane or civil disaster. So I was just riffing on it. I was just throwing out the best idea I could think of. And they said, you can't just commandeer buses. I said, you know what? A smart, brave mayor, meaning probably a Republican and not a nitwit Democrat like Ray Nagin, would have said, damn the consequences. I'll take the blame later on. You round up those buses, put drivers at the wheel, and you get people out of harm's way. And then if somebody wants to criticize me later for moving 5 or 10,000 people out of the path of a hurricane, I'll be happy to take the blame. But we don't have those kind of courageous leaders. We have the kind of leaders who write things in a plan, they stick it in a notebook, they put it on the shelf, and then nobody pays attention to it when the emergency actually arrives.